All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Hello and welcome once again to the Read Rothbard podcast. My name is Daniel and with me is my friend Robert. How are you doing, Robert?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we have each other on. Constantly, this is episode, I think, 28 now, not including the two specials we've done, or three specials now. How many? We've done three specials, yeah. So this would be episode 31 if we're counting chronologically.
Shit! It's a lot.
I can hardly believe
it. Feels like a lot. It's really not a lot, but I don't know.
Yeah, we do tend to go a little long, ladies. So that's probably a good 40 hours of content, which is pretty impressive, you know. That's a fair amount of just two guys talking. I don't know if we say a whole lot of relevant stuff, but I think a few people are out there listening.
Yeah, baby.
And actually, one of my friends who's in Thailand, he asked me for the link the other day because I'd been telling him about it, and so we'll get some feedback from the other side of the world before too long here.
Well, Thailand with the new king, the new oligarch, the former prince.
New boss, same as the old boss, pretty much like what happened here.
Yeah, it's almost creepy. I don't know. When I was over in Thailand, it was, you were not, you know, if you said anything disparaging about the king, they would like lock you up and throw you in jail. That's just sort of like saying something or making any kind of like image, like if you defaced any kind of image of like a poster of a guy, or they like took that shit super seriously. Like, these people are gods. You are not to assume or say anything like that they are human beings just ruling over you for no reason. You got to keep up the image, you know? You got to keep up that illusion, the religion.
Yeah, so they're just more open about it, it sounds like, because it's somewhat more implicit here in the United States.
Yeah, they have I guess it's a lot like the Japanese government where you have this royal family who's like a king, but they're kind of figureheady, kind of like England. And then they have the parliament that makes all the laws and whatnot, and I don't know how much interaction there is, but it's really creepy. And the guy finally died, and then, you know, get the kid in.
And don't they have sporadic bouts of coups and violence and you know, newsworthy events every couple of years? I keep seeing things about that over the years.
Yeah, it's quite frequent, it seems. I remember when I was going there, there were questions about some Islamic terrorism, because the city does have quite a few amount of a Muslim population. I guess what the Philippines has a great deal also, which is nearby. But yeah, recently there was a bunch of coups, and then there's always protests, and those protesters get, you know, bombed, or not necessarily bombed, but dealt with rather severely. Although you would go there, and it's a really nice place. It's a really nice place, as long as you don't see anything that is unpopular or something like that. I don't know. Maybe they're just really nice to tourists. Which is probably the case. So your friend is probably going to be just fine.
I hope so. It does seem to like be a place where people will go for, say, medical procedures, because it's a fair amount cheaper than here for many reasons, which we can get into on a future show, perhaps. But it's like a medical tourism thing where a procedure that would cost you $5,000 to $10,000 would be done there for just a couple thousand, if that.
Yeah, that's very much the case. I remember walking around in malls down there in Bangkok, and they would have, like, you know, a dentist right there or some sort of a doctor service. And, you know, they had like a list of services they could provide. And there's definitely a whole lot of medical tourism going on in the places like that.
Now, did it seem like the prices were readily available, so like you could comparison shop?
I didn't actually go in, but that's what I understand it to be like. So I don't quote me on it, but from what I understand, that's what it's like.
Okay. Here, of course, there's no way of knowing how much you're going to be charged for anything. Everything is pretty much, you know, whatever the insurance company says they're going to pay. And
yeah,
there's a lot
there are some free market places here in the States, but they're few and far between. Like, there's one in a couple in Tennessee and places like that. There've been some stories about them. People have to go there, and it's actually, even with the airfare and the putting yourself up in a hotel, it's still cheaper depending on what kind of procedure you're getting done.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, because if they just say, okay, we're not going to deal with Medicare or the insurance companies, then our burden of administrative work will be 90% less. Therefore, we can focus on what we do, which is provide medical care, and charge a more appropriate price, you know, a more competitive price.
Right. Yeah, government screws things up, which you wouldn't know by listening to this podcast, because we love it.
We love it so hard.
It's really good. We're Keynesians.
Big time.
Yep.
So I didn't mean to go into Thailand and the medical industry in this episode. We were going to talk about The Usual Suspects, which is a film that we had brought up on a previous episode, where there was a scene where we were wondering whether something was justifiable by Kaiser Soze in killing his own family. And so that sparked us in wanting to view the film again through these new eyes that we have, and then have a discussion. And before we get into it, I just want to remind everyone that we run readrothbard.com. And if you'd like to support us in what we do, we've got a tip jar where we have a Patreon page, and we've got Amazon links and a bunch of other things. So if you need to do any Christmas shopping or even shopping for yourself, feel free to click on one of our links. It won't cost you anything, and we'll get a small commission out of that. So we would appreciate it, and thank you for that.
Muchas gracias.
So let's get into it.
Yeah, so The Usual Suspects. Big spoilers. I mean, this movie came out in 95. This is a 21-year-old movie. Probably seen it by now. But if you haven't, this is going to be completely spoiled and probably ruin your enjoyment of the movie, because this is a movie that has a big twist at the end. And essentially the entire movie leads up to this big dramatic ending, which is going to be completely ruined for you if you listen to this and you haven't seen the movie. So I recommend the movie. It's a great movie. It's probably, no, it's not probably, it is definitely Bryan Singer's best work. His first movie and his best movie. He did a few other short things before that, but yeah, anyway, go watch it, then come back and listen to this episode, because we're going to ruin it all.
Yeah, and even with that said, I've seen this movie at least a dozen times, and the twist at the end, it still gives me chills. So even if we ruined it for you, it's still worth watching. I think it's still a very good movie. It's an interesting movie. It's fun to watch. It has a nice atmosphere to it, and the twist might still get you, even if you listen to us here.
Yeah, even if you knew what the twist was at the end, and I knew it, of course, the whole time, because I've seen it many times, I still enjoyed it on repeat viewing, even though I was analyzing it for this show. It's still really good, because you can still marvel at the acting and exactly what they do show and what they don't show, and from whose perspective and how it's told. It's just well done. So, Daniel, what is this movie about? Starring, what do you got? We got Gabriel Byrne. We got Kevin Spacey.
We got the Baldwin boys.
Oh, yeah, one of the lesser Baldwins.
Yeah, Steven. And he's awesome in this, I think. He's unhinged, you know?
He plays kind of an intense dude. Yeah, McManus.
Yeah, give me the keys, you fucking cocksucker! Blah!
Yeah, and then we got Kevin Pollak, who's like a fairly famous comedian guy who was pretty good in it. There isn't really a bad performance. Even Pete Postlethwaite as the lawyer Kobayashi was good.
Del Toro, Benicio.
Benicio, he's not in it a whole lot, but he's really good. One of his younger-looking movies, obviously. But, Gabriel Byrne. But, of course, the standout performance is Kevin Spacey. He plays Verbal Kint, and he is a cripple. And he is, like, the partner to Gabriel Byrne's Keaton character, who is, like, this long time. I mean, these are all career criminal guys. And how exactly it's all formed and how Spacey's character has become the partner of Byrne isn't clear. We just know that they've been partners for a while. They have a relationship. But anyway, the movie starts, and well, let's just get into it. Starts on a boat, and Gabriel Byrne's character is, does he light the fire? No, the fire is going, but then a mysterious character pisses on the fire trail and puts it out, and then he walks down, shoots Gabriel Byrne, and then he goes and lights the fire. Did that make sense to you? Because the fire was going to kill, maybe it gave him more time to get off the boat, I guess.
Yeah, and it was just another example of his badassness.
Right. So that is Kaiser Soze, this mysterious figure. And Gabriel Byrne names him right there, right before he gets shot by him. And then we cut to, what is it, a couple of weeks earlier or a couple of days earlier, something like that. And a truck is stolen full of like gun parts. And the cops round up the usual suspects, these five guys. And I think that's an interesting thing to talk about right off the bat. They don't necessarily have any information or any kind of evidence directly linking any of these people to this crime, but they're, you know, the usual suspects. So these are people that are career criminals. There's likely that they either know something about it or that they do have something to do with it, but they have no idea if they really do. So they just go out and they kidnap these people. Now, later on, it's revealed that Soze has set this whole thing up for them to get all in this one room together. But at the time, could you say it's a moral thing for these cops to, when a bad thing happens, just go out and start kidnapping people that may or may not have anything to do with it?
Well, I think Fenster says it best. They have no PC. No probable cause.
That's right. Yeah, no probable cause. Exactly what he says. So yeah, I think that's an immoral thing. Argue with me on that, Daniel. Argue. Say that they do. Defend the cops somehow, some way.
Yeah,
they gotta find the guy that stole the truck, right?
Yeah, the truck or the gun parts that are gonna get destroyed. Struck me at this before I got through the whole movie for this viewing, when I first saw this scene, I was like, this is an example of a government intervention that causes some unforeseen effects. Like, had the police not brought these five criminals together, then the heist to rob New York City's finest taxi cab service would never have occurred.
Correct.
Those
or would have had to. Right. Or so they would have had to set it up some other way. But yeah.
Yeah. So it was the intervention that caused this meeting of these people, and then of course this other heist that then. They took that as a fuck you to the NYPD to make sure that they brought that whole system down on them, that whole taxi service thing where they were smuggling jewels.
Right, so not only did it bring everybody together, but it also gave them an excuse to try and say fuck you to the cops, like fuck you for bringing us in with no probable cause.
And no warrant, I would imagine. Like,
right.
They wake up McManus in the bed. Like, you don't serve a warrant like that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. He was just, like, asleep. And Byrne Keaton, he was out at a dinner, like, having a nice dinner. And, like, Pollock was, like, at work at his shop. And I forget where Spacey got kidnapped from, but anyway.
Yeah, and and Benicio del Toro was walking on the street and tried to play it cool when he saw the cops and turn the other way and pretend like he wasn't seen. So then, you know, they of course nabbed him. But I don't know. Did you mention that Keaton actually was an ex-cop? He was a dirty cop back in the day.
No, I did not mention that yet. So yeah, good to point out.
Yeah, and so he was aware of that taxi service being in play like years prior, and he thought it had been shut down. And I think it was Verbal was the man with the plan. And he knew that it was still
right.
In existence and organized or orchestrated the heist so that no one
right.
would get killed because they didn't want it to, you know, have a bigger retaliation as a result. They wanted it to be an exposure of the corruption. And I think even the chief on down got fired, something like that.
So let's talk about this New York's Finest Taxi Service. So what it is that you can hire off-duty cops for a certain amount of money, and they will escort you with a police escort wherever you want to go for a certain amount of money. And they don't ask any questions, and they just do their job. Like, so in the movie, there's a guy, obvious criminal, or whatever. He's like trying to move some either stolen emeralds, or he just happens to have emeralds. We don't know. But or maybe it is mentioned, I'm not sure, but he has like 3 million in emeralds, and he's using the cops to drive him a place. Now, in Ancapistan, I don't see anything wrong with that. You got a bunch of emeralds, you hire some people to drive you to a place. But in the movie, apparently it's this big scandal, because you're having cops drive around. What, is it known that they're criminals? Known criminals? Or is it just the fact that they're working on the side that's supposedly wrong?
Oh, I read it as it was definitely criminal activity. It was stolen goods, and it was known that they were stolen goods.
Okay. Okay. So,
I mean,
if it was
just providing a off-duty bodyguard escort service, no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, perhaps they were using a police cruiser, and you know, it's supposed to be for official use only. Like you see that on the side of all those vehicles with the exempt plates.
Right, because they were driving official cop cars.
Yeah, but you know, if that's the extent of the criminality here, I would be surprised.
Right. Okay. So with this 3 million, they need to find a fence for it. Oh, by the way, the heist of them robbing the emeralds is very much a violent assault. They box in the cop car, and then they all point guns at them, demanding the emeralds and the cash.
And then set the car on fire.
Then set the car on fire and leave. Right. So there's nothing moral about what they're doing. They're absolutely violently assaulting and robbing these people.
This is a retaliation, like we were saying before, for the no PC, no warrant, pull him in for the lineup. And if I recall, they beat up McManus and Keaton a little bit during the interrogation.
Yes, definitely. I remember Keaton's face was a little bit bruised up. Probably McManus. I don't remember that, though. But yeah.
Yeah, so maybe it was an out-of-scale response for that, like a retaliation?
And a retaliation against other cops. So, if you're treating the entire department as one person, I could understand it better, but you're responding to an assault from one person and attacking the person's coworker. So, you can't exactly say that that's any kind of proper retribution.
Yeah, yeah. You're almost getting into a Hatfield-McCoy situation in this.
Sort of a mafia gang war, where you just like hit any number of their guys for any number of your guys.
Yeah, and I think Hatfield and McCoy would be an interesting conversation to have. In fact, I think there's a Netflix series about it, like a three-parter. So I don't know.
Oh, yeah?
That might be something worth watching, because that's one of those libertarian or questions that libertarians get. Like, well, if there wasn't the government in there, you know, policing everyone and providing safety, what would happen if two rival gangs got into it with each other? You know, Hatfield and McCoy situation.
And we have those situations, but a lot of those situations happen because those people are involved in illegal activities, deemed illegal by the government, by the way, not illegal because they're immoral, and therefore they are unable to take their disputes to court. But the fact that the Hatfields and the McCoys are such a notorious story shows you how rarely it happens, even in, say, the notoriously law-free Appalachian Hills of the 1800s.
Yeah, I mean, if you got to go back 150 years to cite an example, and you know, I don't know enough about it right now, but I think that might be one that we could do in the future after we've had a chance to watch that and maybe do a little bit of research about it. But I think mm-hmm. that would be a good, solid, meaty thing to discuss, because I get the Hatfield-McCoy, I get the there'd be people with Toyota pickups with machine guns on the back, like these rival warlords warring for each other. There'd be a civil war, all these things, if there wasn't a government. It would be the bad version of anarchy.
Yeah, it would be The Purge, it would be Mad Max, it would be all these entertainment things that just never happen, or happen so rarely that I would gladly take those any day of the week. If there's one instance of Hatfield, even if there's one instance of Hatfield and McCoy every year, regardless of every century, I still take that, as opposed to the countless number of times you were robbed on a regular basis by the government. So, they need to fence the $3 million in emeralds. And so they go over to California, and they find a guy named Redfoot. And he takes the emeralds, right? And yep. Then he has a job for them, since they happen to be out there. Hey, do you want to do a job? And they decide that they're going to. Yes, they will do that job, because why not? They're a bunch of crooks, and they like to get paid. So they...
They were told that it was for, I think, more jewels or something like that, and it turns out that what the guy was carrying was heroin, and so they're, of course, very upset about this because they can't do anything with the heroin.
Right, so they do carry out this armed robbery where they end up murdering three people. And then, yeah, the source, they actually have heroin, and they're upset with Redfoot because it wasn't what he claimed it was. And Redfoot's like, well, geez, I don't know everything about everything. I got this job from this Kobayashi lawyer guy. Talk to him.
So yeah, like,
yes,
know,
we would like.
What's weird about it is that why should they care? Because wasn't the deal with Redfoot that he wanted whatever the guy was carrying and they could get the cash he was carrying? Because they said, this guy, you know, he carries jewels and a lot of cash, so you get me the goods and you keep the cash. That's your payment.
Well, then they have no argument. Because they got the cash, right?
Yeah, unless there wasn't any.
Unless there was, there might have been the case. There might have been just heroin or cocaine or whatever in the bags. Because that's when they opened up the case, that's what was in there. Maybe they're expecting to find cash?
Yeah, it could be.
Anyway, even though we just watch it, we're still not exactly 100% clear on all the little details.
Yeah,
so
and of course,
any
time I watch a movie, it's 20 minutes here, 15 minutes there. So it took me probably 4 days to watch this, and I just finished it before we started.
Nice. Well done, Daniel.
You like it like I do.
So, yeah, that's how you do. So at the same time and this is all told in, you know, flashbacks from Kevin Spacey talking to this police detective. And so after the discussion with Redfoot, he hooks him up with a meeting with the lawyer guy, Kobayashi. And what does Kobayashi initially do? He brings in a case and gives them all files on them.
Yeah, where he knows everything about everything they've ever done.
Right, all the people they've ever talked to, all the people they've ever worked with, everything they've ever done. And
yeah, he offers them a job for Kaiser Sose, and he says that they owe it to Kaiser Sose to do this because they have all each stolen from him without knowing. Like, they have done jobs that were Kaiser Sose's goods that were stolen.
Right, so they knew they were stealing from somebody, they just didn't know it was Kaiser Sose. Or at least he's claiming that it was his. Because he also, the job he claims, is to destroy a bunch of cocaine of some Argentinians who Kaiser Soze is in competition with, and if they can destroy this, what, $91 million in cocaine, they can put a serious dent in their operations, allowing Soze to, you know, do better in business.
Yeah, and I think he said that they would have $91 million to split whichever way they wanted. So I'm not too clear on how that would have worked if it was $91 million, or I guess it would have... It was going to be a transaction, right? So the cocaine was on the ship, and the van coming to pick it up was bringing the money. So destroy the coke, and they get to keep the money.
Right.
That was the deal. Okay.
That sounds right. So Fenster, he's like, fuck this, I'm out. He ends up taking a portion of the money that they had already made and leaves. And his body is found, like, washed up on the shore the next day. Or in a cave or something like that. So, would you say that he was killed because he knew too much? Or, I mean, morally, we're talking, just because I don't want to, you know, associate with you, just because I don't want to do a job for you, I mean, what right do you have to murder me?
Yeah, I read that as Kobayashi was telling them that they had stolen from Kaiser Sose, and the only reason that they were still alive was because they didn't know they had stolen from him. And the way that he wanted the restitution to be would be that they pull off this job. And so for Fenster to not do that, that was enough reason for Sose to order him to be killed. I'm not saying that's moral, ethical, or anything. Clearly it's outsized to the alleged transgression. But in his code of, you know, here's the deal I'm giving you, gun to your head deal. Fenster didn't do it.
Right, because the whole time, the whole movie, Soze is made out as this totally fanatical, totally ruthless, murdering guy. And right after that is when Spacey is telling the story to the police lieutenant guy, and he mentions, or the police lieutenant guy comes in and says, who is Kaiser Soze? And then he tells this story. So let's get into that. So Soze is back in, what, Turkey?
Sounds right.
And he has a family, and he has a certain amount of territory. He's, like, selling dope. And the mafia know he's a man not to be trifled with, but they want his territory. So when he's not home, they go to his house, they rape his wife, and when he arrives, you got, like, two kids, the wife and a kid sitting on the couch, and then another, like, a daughter being held with a gun to her head by one of the guys, and a son being held with a knife to his throat by another guy. So they're what, like three thugs? And as soon as he enters, the guy with the knife to his throat, knife to the throat of the son, slits the boy's throat, kills him.
To show they mean business.
To show they mean business. And at this point, Soze shoots dead two of the guys. The one sitting with the wife and the kid on the sofa, or near it, and the guy that had just killed the boy, leaving the guy with the gun to the head of his daughter. And then, at this point, he clearly has the power to kill the third guy and save his wife and the other child on the couch. But instead, he shoots dead the wife and the kid on the couch, and then shoots dead his own daughter that's got a gun to her head by the third guy. And he tells the guy that he would rather see his family dead than live another day. I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
I guess after having lived through that experience, that horrible experience of his wife being raped and the kids witnessing that and being their home broken into and their brother being murdered in front of them.
So he's doing his children a favor by murdering them all and his wife and then just having them all dead in his past?
Well, that's what that quote seems to be saying, is that he would rather them be dead than not have to live with that pain, I suppose. But it also seems that he wanted to leave the one guy alive to use it to further his mystical or mythical legend, you know, of how crazy and how badass this guy is.
Right. The quote in the movie is, he showed these men of Will what Will truly is. That he is the ultimate badass, he's the ultimate shark, and he will do what the other guy won't. And that plays back to an earlier quote in the movie where he's talking about how, in order to get ahead, you don't have to be rich or know certain people or whatever, you just have to have the will to do what somebody else won't do. And then it kind of goes into cartoon territory, because then he says, or legend territory, and he says he goes on to kill the families of the mob, and the mob, and everyone ever associated with the mob, anyone who ever took out money or loaned or owed the mob money, or like children and the grandparents and like the friends of the mob, just like an entire city of some kind, apparently. And then Spacey says he disappears. So do you want to break down the scene from a libertarian point of view, Daniel?
Well, that's easy.
This is what we promised to do.
He clearly violates the NAP here and can no longer claim self-defense once he starts shooting his own family.
Yeah, he becomes the aggressor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, yeah, if he had walked in and just shot dead the three guys, you'd say, clear case of self-defense. You got guns to the heads. You only point a gun at something you intend to destroy. So as far as you know, they intend to murder your children. They've established themselves as violent thugs, and you're free to treat them as violent thugs.
Yeah, they broke into your home. Yeah, go ahead.
No, what you were going to say, yeah, they broke into your home. They raped your wife. They murdered one of your children. I mean, what are you supposed to think at that point? You murder someone, and not to mention the fact that if someone murdered my child in front of me, I get the benefit of the doubt from anything that happens at that point after that. I mean, short of murdering my own family. I would, yeah, if he didn't even have, like, let's say he murders the two guys, he kills the two thugs, right? And then the third guy, he only disarms. And then he proceeds to go ahead and beat the guy to death with his fists or something like that. I would still give him the benefit of the doubt. Even if you're saying that, well, at that point, the physical violent confrontation is over, and he is now the aggressor if he's going on to beat this man to death. He didn't initiate this whole scenario. He didn't initiate the scene, and he just saw his child get murdered. He's clearly not in any kind of right mind, or at least I wouldn't be. That's for damn sure. What are your thoughts, Daniel?
Yeah, I think the legal standard is once you've eliminated the threat of aggression from the perpetrator, is when you have to stop. But yeah, I think you're right. If you just saw them murder your kid and rape your wife, I would imagine there'd be some level of temporary insanity being certainly used as a justification for whatever happened after that.
Right. Yeah, so from a strict moral standpoint, like you said, you're supposed to stop once the threat of physical violence has ended, but the rage you would be feeling, it's kind of hard to stop that murder train. Easier said than done.
Yeah, and you don't even have kids, and you already know what that feeling would be, you know, like you can imagine it. I mean, yeah, I'm right there with you. Like, if anyone were to mess with my kids, I would not recommend it.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a certain amount of the fact that exists, that people aren't just 100% rational robots and can turn off their emotions at any given time, I think it serves as a good deterrent to starting physical violence in the first place. Because people end up dead. Adults, people are emotional beings, and when you fuck with them and theirs, just like with the Hatfields and the McCoys, you know, you murder my grandchild and I'm probably going to fly off the handle or something like that. You know, I mean, even though we can say, yeah, look back and say, yeah, that act was immoral, in the moment, it's kind of hard to stop that moving train of emotion and anger and sadness and fury. And I tend to give the benefit of the doubt to victims of the violence when they try to seek out justice in their own way. I can cast judgment on myself, but it's hard when you're not personally involved.
I'd agree with that. And what is justice in our system today, you know? Like, what retribution is made to the victims or the survivors of the victims today, knowing that the bad guy goes to jail, what does that really do for you? You know, is that justice?
Right.
That seems to be what people think of as justice, and it's supposed to make people feel better. But I think in an Ancapistan scenario, it would be all about doing whatever that could be done to give restitution to the victims, not just locking some guy up.
Right, and the best form of restitution would win out, right?
Right, yeah, there'd be alternate systems of justice in a market system. And you sort of see that in the movie a little bit, but clearly Kaiser Sose can't go to the police after this has happened.
Right.
And the five guys who were brought in, the usual suspects guys who were brought in, you know, they can't then complain to the police about the police. So they have their own systems of justice that, you know, they're certainly a little bit more mafioso and a little bit more hardcore and intense than I'd expect in Ancapistan. But it's because there's a monopoly and they're sort of put in that position where they have to solve it on their own and they are violent people that, you know, we see what plays out in the film.
Right. Agreed. So Spacey tells that story to the cop and basically plays it off as if this Kaiser Soze character is like a boogeyman meant to scare people. But of course the whole question of the movie is this Kaiser Soze person, the real person, who is he? Yada, yada, yada. So the next scene is that they go after they find Fenster dead, they decide that they're going to go after this Kobayashi lawyer character. And they pose as like maintenance workers in this office building. And they, Kobayashi is getting into an elevator with two, I assume, bodyguards, but they're just two people in suits. and McManus murders them straight up. He's sitting on top of the elevator and shoots them dead, and then like drops down. And they get off on a floor, not where Kobayashi intended, where the rest of the gang is, and they kind of interrogate this lawyer and threaten to kill him. Where Kobayashi kind of bargains for his life, saying that he has Keaton's girlfriend in his office doing a deal. And if they could hold off on killing him until he goes up and finishes his business. And this kind of persuades them to allow him to do that. And then they're kind of like, okay, well, I guess we're not going to kill him right now. And we're going to go do this job because this Kaiser Soze character and this lawyer character knows all the people that these criminals care about, or at least threatens to know, like, hey, your aunt in Arizona could be dead if you don't do this, or that sort of thing. So he's saying, you have to do this job or else we will murder your loved ones. So they're coercing them into doing this job on this boat to destroy this cocaine.
Yeah,
are you still on board, Daniel, with this kind of being like restitution, retribution? Because this is full-on coercion.
You know, I did read this a little bit differently. I read it as Kobayashi was playing chess while the usual suspects guys were playing checkers. Because they were saying, like, they killed Fenster. We think this Kaiser Soze thing is bullshit. And let's just take out this lawyer. So they fully intend to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
But Kobayashi probably suspected this and planned ahead and brought in Edie Finneran so that he would have that card to play when it came to that situation. And he knew that because he had Keaton's girlfriend, and if anything happened to Kobayashi, his girlfriend would get killed. He knew that would prevent them from killing him. And then, of course, once they see that she's actually there, Kobayashi tells them all, well, your uncle in Arizona and your grandfather over here and I may just castrate your nephew, and mentions their names. So he's letting them know that if they don't do the job, then people that they know and love will be harmed as a result. So it's certainly coercion. It is also an alternate system of justice. I love it when people say, you know, well, you don't want to have a government, so you just want people to just be able to get away with murdering and raping and being violent with each other, as if there would be no repercussions whatsoever except for the police. You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
That is a pet peeve of mine, because they constantly say, oh, you don't want cops. You must want everybody to just run around and do whatever you want. No, there are thousands of millions of forms of retribution to all our actions. There are always consequences. We've talked about this in the past, but it's a really bad argument that gets made all the time, because I just don't think people just don't understand. They take a lot of these natural forms of punishment, if you want to call it, or retribution, societal checks and balances, just for granted, because they're essentially invisible. You just don't count them. I mean, when your mother nags you for not doing a thing, or your wife nags you for not doing a thing, that is absolutely a check against your behavior, but you don't see it as one. But that is a form of policing your behavior. And there are millions of those things all over the place.
Yeah,
whenever you're in a conversation with somebody else and they kind of look at you funny, you go, oh, maybe I said something weird right there or did something weird or whatever. You're telling them a story about something you did and they react a certain way. That's giving you feedback on your behavior. And you care about how they react, or else you wouldn't be telling them. But go ahead, Daniel.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like you're saying, a million different ways to where you get feedback, whether you've done something that someone else views as a transgression or not. And it's not as if people are going to go around killing each other just because there aren't police there enforcing something that is clearly wrong, whether there's police or not.
Yeah.
You know,
there's news stories of cops, like, just not even being in an area. Like, there were, like, no cops in, like, a city for, like, a certain amount of time, and, like, the crime rate didn't change at all. I'm really bad at remembering this, but I know that there have been stories like that.
I recall there was some stuff in Detroit where there wasn't enough funding to have the police, or it was considered too dangerous for the police to go into the area. And so there were these private security things that sprung up and provided some level of security for that area. And they weren't even armed, if I recall.
Right, because there are gun laws. You can't be armed in Detroit.
Right, yep.
Or Chicago.
You can't defend yourself. Yet there's more gun violence in Chicago than anywhere else.
Yeah, and they're on record track this year. I mean, I think they already broke a bunch of records.
Yeah.
Set the all-time murder record for Chicago this year.
I have heard the argument that because Chicago is so close to Indiana that it's easy for people to just go get a gun in Indiana and then come back to Chicago. And that's apparently the reason why it's has so many gun, so much gun violence. Allegedly.
Right, because it's hard to get a gun otherwise.
Yeah, yeah, it's hard if you're in Chicago to get one, but if you just go across to Gary, Indiana, you can get one, and then you just come right back.
But that's the old tired argument of, well, let's just make something illegal, and then it won't be there anymore. I mean, drugs are illegal. How hard is it to get drugs?
Right, yeah. You can get drugs in prison, you know?
Yeah, yeah. They're, you can get the drugs in prison.
Area.
Right. So... yeah, it's ridiculous. Just because you make a thing illegal, you can't legislate human behavior. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, so let's move on. I think we're almost wrapped up with the movie here.
Yeah, so we get to the finale where the gang is going to attack this boat, and the on the precept is that there's a bunch of cocaine on the boat, like I said, and they're going to go in and destroy it. What really happens is that they get on the boat, and it turns out that there's an informant on the boat, and this whole boat is essentially geared towards protecting this one informant.
Well, they're selling
and everybody
him
on the boat.
The one gang is selling him to the other gang, as he's the only one who can actually legally pin down who Kaiser Soze is.
Right. He's got the dirt on Soze, and yeah, one gang selling him to another to finally take Soze down. And Soze is actually, you finally figure it out at the end of the movie here, that Soze has orchestrated this whole series of events to take out all the defenders on this boat so that he can get in and murder this informant. So that's exactly what happens. Verbal is left behind. Keaton doesn't want him to come along, so he's kind of sitting back, and he's telling the story of him kind of being a coward and being afraid, so he didn't go in on the boat, where McManus and Keaton and Hockney all kind of storm the boat, and they're using like submachine guns and like sniper rifles and killing a whole bunch of people. And then they find that there's no cocaine on the boat. And we see shots of Pollock's character getting killed by the van after he finds all the money. And then we see a mysterious character killing the informant. And then we find a knife in the back of McManus. And then we get a guy shooting down Keaton's character. And this whole time, Kintz is telling the story. And he's telling it from the perspective of him watching it from the dock. And then he leaves. Oh, and I guess another side note is that one of the survivors of the boat, after it's been set on fire and exploded and all that, is this burned victim that the police are interrogating her in his hospital bed. And he has done a sketch of what Kaiser Soze looks like. And they fax it over to the police station after Kintz left. And, of course, it looks just like Kevin Spacey. And he's walking out. And he's had this gimp limp the whole movie. And he's got this, like, fucked-up hand that's kind of, like, frozen in place. And, of course, that's perfectly fine. And then he walks away and gets in the car with the lawyer. And they drive off as the police lieutenant guy figures it all out. He's looking at his wall. And he sees the orca fat girl and the Muncie, Indiana, and the barbershop quartet, because it was the quartet board. And Skokie, Illinois, and the Kobayashi China, he's drinking his coffee out of. And all these details from a story that are all lining up, and he's figuring it all out, and he runs out, and of course, he's gone. So yeah, it's revealed that Burl Kintz was Kaiser Soze the whole time, and he orchestrated the whole thing. And damn good. But of course, the violation of the NAP to violently murder all these people that are on this boat.
Yeah, I think it's a well-done story. It's certainly captivating and fun to watch, and it's very moody and has a lot of appeal to it. I like the beginning areas where he's talking with the police and he's trying to engender them to like do things for him and treat him nice, and he's trying to become chummy with them in a way so that they would suspect him even less, you know, like he says he really needs coffee,
right? Even though he absolutely did that, Right, and he was in the barbershop quartet. But even though he had complete immunity from very high up, that should have been a big red flag.
Yeah, and they talked about that, and they knew it, and they knew that he was going to be released any time, and that he didn't have to talk to them, but they still wanted to.
Right.
So they were trying to strong-arm him a little bit.
But he felt he had such a, had them totally fooled, because at one point, even the cop thought he was, like, stupid and a cripple. He really sold it that he was frightened and dumb, even though he was the guy with the plan to rob the New York's finest taxi service.
And apparently orchestrated this whole other overall situation, but of course cops didn't know that. But yeah, he did take ownership or claim ownership of the taxi cab service thing initially. But then when Agent Kuyan was saying, no, it was Keaton who was Kaiser Sose, he set this all up. And then Kevin Spacey's character said, yes, it was Keaton all along. He orchestrated the whole thing, even the New York taxi finest thing.
Right. The cop thinks Keaton is Sose because even though Spacey says he saw him get killed, there was no body found, right?
Right, and Keaton had apparently died previously, like in a warehouse explosion, to escape from being found to beat a murder rap or something in the past. And Agent Kuyan, of course, knew this, that he had faked his death previously. So he
right.
just suspected he was doing the same thing again.
Right. And yeah, and he was the guy that he had been investigating the whole time, so he was more prone to believe that Keaton was Sose. He certainly had the profile and the apparent intelligence to be able to be the guy, but...
Yeah. So here's... If you don't have anything...
You are breaking up for some reason. Are you there?
I'm here, yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
So if you don't have anything else, I have like a coup de grace to this whole story.
Bring it, please.
All right. So it turns out that Verbalkind is Kaiser Sose.
What?
I know, right? Spoilers. And he may have made up most of the story according to what was on this bulletin board. So it's really hard to know what's true and what isn't in this film.
Yeah, but, like the lawyer's character is Kobayashi. So was Kobayashi just, did he change the name of the lawyer character? Because I mean, clearly when he gets in the car, there's the lawyer character. So we assume that he was real.
Right, maybe just a different name or whatever. But so if the whole plot was to orchestrate his way into this heavily defended ship so that he could personally take out the one guy, the one informant who could pin him, who could identify him, knew what he looked like, then isn't the reveal that Verbal is Kaiser Sose at the end sort of defeating the whole purpose? Because now Agent Kuyan, the whole department, everyone who was there, now knows what Kaiser Sose looks like, which was
oh,
the whole point of this whole fucking movie, was to kill the one guy who knew what he looked
right.
like.
Right. So, and yeah, he changed out one guy for everybody. Because, yeah, it'll be on every police wire. They got pictures of, you know, the artist's interpretation or rendition of the guy. I assume they'd have booking pictures, right? Yeah, because they round up the usual suspects at the very beginning. So they've got his mugshot. So, yeah,
so is he back at square one, but worse?
But he doesn't know that, right? He walks out of the police station not knowing that they had figured him out. He walks out of the police station believing that he was Golden.
Okay, so maybe it still works in that respect, like the cops actually figured it out, and he didn't expect them to, because cops always look for the simple explanation, is one of the lines he says in there.
Right, and he didn't know about the burn victim being still alive. Or at least it's assumed not, or else he would have been, you know, probably killed.
Yeah, okay.
Because that's not even, on the Sose's radar, apparently.
So unbeknownst to him, he's actually in a worse off position for going through all of this than previously.
Right, and it would have happened anyway, whether he told the story or not, because it all hinged on the artist's rendition of the guy still surviving.
Right, yeah, because Kuyan figured it out from the bulletin board like moments before.
Right.
But of course, Kevin Spacey's character escaped even moments before that.
Yes. So yeah, clearly he has the resources to find out that they know who he is now, but I'm sure he would go underground even more so. But yeah, in the end, it didn't pay off for him. because yeah, he went through all these resources and came up with this master plan to snuff out the one guy that was going to turn on him, and instead he made a huge, much worse problem for himself.
Yeah, so that's the usual suspects from a sort of libertarian angle. Not a whole lot of libertarianness in there, really. Just a whole lot of violations of the NAP. There are some alternate systems of justice because the cops can't be adjudicated.
Called in to settle dispute, yeah.
Right, and the cops themselves are corrupt. I mean, Keaton was a corrupt cop. The New York's taxi, finest taxi service is obviously a corrupt thing. This is corruption all around. Corruption, coercion,
yeah.
Extortion, violence, all around. But all packed up in a mystery.
Yeah, there wasn't really any good guys in this movie. It was just all a story of a bunch of bad guys doing bad stuff. So that's why I was kind of, when I was watching it, I was like, oh, no, there's not really a whole lot of stuff to talk about here. It's just a whole bunch of straight up obvious violations of the NAP here. I think we did go over a few nuanced things, but for the most part, it's pretty much straight up all bad.
Yeah, though it's not bad in the sense of some of the other movies we've seen, like Fight Club, where there's this strong collectivist message at the end, this anti-consumer collectivist message.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't say that this is any kind of like glorification of criminal activity.
No, and there's no like seemingly underlying theme of, you know, advancing some kind of socialist thought that we get in some of the other films after
Definitely
watching
them
a second time or more recent time after being exposed to libertarian theory and Austrian economics.
Definitely. This is a very small story. This was not a big kind of like social issues kind of movie. This is very much a gangster movie about gangsters doing gangster shit. And I know people who, you know, didn't like Sopranos or other movies, there's, you know, entertainment like that, because there's no good guys. It's just all bad guys doing bad things all the time. And I, you know, I found those kind of things compelling because they're making bad decisions, but they think they're doing it for good reasons. So in that sense, they're somewhat interesting, but I can see how people would be turned off by things kind of like this. And whereas there's no rooting interest, there's no protagonist in the traditional sense where you're rooting for the good guy to overcome evil or something like that. Still, good movie. Holds up 21 years later.
Yeah, and I didn't realize how young Spacey looked in this until watching it again, because he always, just in my mind, seems to be like the same looking for 20, 21 years.
Yeah, he's held up pretty well. The one that looked youngest for me was Benicio del Toro. I think he's aged the most. If you look back at, what were those really old movies that he was in? I can't remember, but he did a bunch of movies back when he was, like action movies. He would have like a bit part where he was like, you know, gang member number one or gang member number two or something like that, or henchman number five or something like that, you know, back when he was like just early 20s. It just looks totally different. He's really got a different face these days than he used to have.
Yeah, I'm looking at his wiki, and he was in a Madonna music video as a background character staying in a car. He was in Big Top Pee Wee. He was in James Bond, License to Kill.
Yeah, he was definitely a henchman guy in that movie.
Oh, yeah, I remember him now, yeah. Yeah, and then, yeah, a bunch of other just kind of low-end movies.
Yeah.
But I like him. He's a good actor. He's fun to watch.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of good movies. I mean, he's been in, you know, Snatch, Usual Suspects, Traffic, Sicario. I don't know. Sicario's not the greatest, but in my opinion. But, yeah, he's going to be in the new Star Wars movie. And he was in Guardians of the Galaxy. Kind of interesting. He's had a large body of work. But, yeah.
Yeah, so do you think Snatch might be a good movie to do?
Well, it's on my top, you know, top 50 list. It's a fantastic film. But it's another movie of gangsters doing gangster shit. I don't know if there's really... I guess there's definitely more of a protagonist, though. You've got your two main characters, played by Jason Statham and the other guy I can't think of. And they're more just like boxing promoter kind of guys who kind of get thrown this giant jewel and don't really know what to do with it. I mean, and the whole movie, it kind of revolves around this giant jewel. So I don't think they're necessarily like, they're definitely not like hardcore gangbanger type murder guys like Bullet Tooth Tony or anything like that. So maybe there would be more things to discuss. I don't know if there's any kind of nuance. There's definitely a whole lot of hijinks. a lot of inept crook type activities. Like we're going to rob these guys with like, you know, squirt guns.
Okay.
So there's one scene where they go in and trying to intimidate, I think, Bullet Tooth Tony with these replica guns. And Bullet Tooth Tony pulls out this 50 caliber Desert Eagle and he's like, you know, I'm not really super intimidated by you. Because your gun says replica down the side and mine says Desert Eagle. So yeah, there might be some things. It'd be fun to rewatch that movie. It's good stuff. Back when Guy Ritchie, back before he married Madonna, and back when he actually had an edge to his films, where he did Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and Snatch, two of my favorite crime caper movies of all time. Excellent performance by Brad Pitt as the bare-knuckle boxer guy.
Seems to be his thing.
Yeah. But yeah, those might be fun to do. Definitely worth watching again. We can maybe squeeze, if we squeeze an episode out of Usual Suspects, we should be able to squeeze something out of Snatch.
All right, well, that sounds good. Well, why don't we start to wrap this one up? I know we had a few news items that we were willing to talk about, but I think we're close enough to a full episode already, and it's getting pretty late over here.
Sure, yeah. We could talk about news, or we could not. I don't really mind. We could wrap it up here.
Yeah, let's wrap it up, B. Let's wrap it up. If you want your news, fake or not, go to the internet. What is there for?
Go to some fake news sites like apparently Breitbart.com or Infowars.com, who have their own take on the news, but apparently the mainstream media calls them fake news, which is kind of funny knowing some of the hijinks that the mainstream media get up to.
Yeah, they would definitely be experts on what is fake news.
Right? They're like, well, what do we do? Oh, yeah, well, these guys do the same thing, so let's call them fake.
Yeah,
not that they
also
don't also report some news.
And also on the internet, you'll find our website, readrothbard.com. We've got Facebook, YouTube. We've got a Twitter account now. We've got Instagram. We've got all the social media crap. I don't know if we're going to do anything with it. But on readrothbard.com, you will find links to Amazon. And click on one of those, buy something, do some Christmas shopping, do whatever. Check us out. Subscribe, like, share, comment, tweet. What's some other stuff you can do? I don't even know anymore.
I don't know. Like Instagram, Snapchat?
Yeah.
Hashtag? I don't know. I'm so old sometimes.
Backslash all day long. Whatever it is you crazy kids do, do it for us.
We would appreciate it. Get on iTunes. Give us a review. It really helps out. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you for doing the show, Robert. I appreciate it. And thank you, listener or two, for listening. And I will say goodnight, Robert. Sign us out there.
Goodnight, Robert. Yes. Thank you, Daniel. Thank you, everybody. Take care.
All right, peace out, homies.
Chipmunks, C-H-I-P-M-U-N-K, we're the chipmunks, guaranteed to brighten your day, do-do, do-do-do-do, do-do, do-do-do-do.